funny, like being an adroit troubleshooter, you end up like, because you know there's always a time lapse when you're talking to tech support, like if you're going back and forth on a ticket or something like that, mm-hmm. with some company, and you're just ping ponging, and but there's like 12 hours between each ping pong, and in my case it was just like, yeah, he would send me a message and then I just start troubleshooting by myself, waiting for him to respond. He'd be like, mm-hmm. okay, send me the logs. I'd be like, okay, here's the logs. And then I would go back to Backblaze. And then I uninstalled and reinstalled and inherited backup state and started working again. And the guy messaged me back this morning after mm-hmm. I did all that last night. He's like, hey, did you uninstall and reinstall and then inherit a backup state since we last talked? I'm like, as a matter of fact, I did. And then he hit me back at the end of my workday, and he's like, all right, well, I guess we'll see if the issue's resolved. And I was like, okay, cool. See you in like 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be a little frustrating because if it's a known issue on their end and something that they're tracking, they're usually going to try to get as much information as they can, which means that they're going to try to give you certain steps to follow to troubleshoot. And if you don't follow the steps and you do something else, basically anything you tell them might be worthless.
Oh yeah. I deal with the same thing at work every day.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, here's an issue. And I'm like, oh, like what have you like, oh, but you made the issue go away mm-hmm. for like, you took care of it yourself. And they're like, yep. And I was like, okay, so why are you telling me this? Like that's essentially my life.
Yeah. It could be nice though. It means it's one thread you don't have to chase down.
Yeah. Well, backups though. Backups is a thing.
What do you mean?
Like just in general, backups in life, you know?
Yeah. What are you getting at? Is this the topic for the evening?
I really just need to get this off my chest, but it's insane. Backups are just the most crucial thing in all of life, I feel like.
Well, do you have anything other than Backblaze? Do you have like a redundant local copy, or do you just remote?
Do I ever? I have two Time Machine drives, and I have an archive as well. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Backblaze comes in. Like my setup right now, I have two Time Machine drives that sit near me, which, you know, if my apartment burns down, I'm basically fucked. Like that's just how it goes.
But you don't have them in like a grab and go case?
A grab and go case? What's that?
Yeah. You don't have like your backup drives like in a little case where you could just unplug them and then leave like really quickly, grab the dog, grab the drives and get out.
If I stopped to grab my drives on the way out, before like the dog, like I would be, I don't know. I would probably just grab the computer. I think
the whole thing.
If I knew Backblaze was working, then I'd probably just grab the computer. I have a portable, man. That's fine.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. You have an iMac.
Which are surprisingly heavy.
Yeah, but yeah, depending on how often you have to pick them up and put it back down. If it's never, then
yeah,
then yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good practice. I know you don't like that. I don't have any Time Machine backups going.
You don't have any?
No, I have a 500
gigabyte
drive.
I'm sending you like a 1 terabyte Western Digital piece of shit drive just so you can make Time Machine backups to it and placate me.
I'll take it. Like I have a 500 gigabyte drive. It was like my first Western Digital external that I ever bought. And it was my backup for my MacBook. But then when I moved to my iMac, I just never set it back up. And it wouldn't be able to back up my entire computer anyway.
Yeah, you have like a 2 or 3 terabyte thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not going to do anything. You would need like a 4 terabyte portable thing at least to back up
yours. Which is the last one that I bought, but I bought that as another archive/media drive.
Yeah. Oh man.
So
yeah. So my backup solution is I have this. I have all GTEC because I'm a tool, and I have a GTEC Thunderbolt drive, which is because I'm a double tool. That's the dumbest decision I ever made. Probably buying a Thunderbolt drive.
Why?
Because it's a spinning Thunderbolt drive.
Yeah.
You're limited completely. It's total vanity. Like you're limited by the speed that the drive spins. It has nothing to do with file transfer speed.
Yeah.
Like Thunderbolt, you can get up to like a gigabit, right? Or a gigabyte. Blah, blah, blah. Gigabit. What am I talking about?
It doesn't, it's not any fat, like if you were to buy the same drive but without Thunderbolt and just got it with USB 3, would it still be?
It took me so long to realize that. It took me like 2 or 3 years to understand that you're totally limited by the speed at which your drive spins. If you have a spinning hard drive, the most you're going to get is like 250 gigabytes a second transfer speed, regardless. Like even Thunderbolt 3, the fastest GTEC drives are transferring that much. It's only so fast that little thing can spin.
Right. How many RPMs do you get?
On my little one, I get 50. What's it? 5,400.
Oh, and then, this is an actual metric.
They spin in two metrics. I'm sorry, they spin in two speeds. 5,400 and 7,200 are the two consumer grade ones, at least that I know of. And I think your iMac is a 7,200, and my little my Thunderbolt one, my vanity drive.
Yeah,
that one is a 5,400 RPM. And that is fine, but it's going. But my USB 3 drive goes just as fast as that. Like, there's no reason, unless you have only Thunderbolt ports on your computer, to get a Thunderbolt
drive. Well, that's kind of nice, though, because then you have all your USB free.
I guess to plug in my Duet. But I mean, I have two Thunderbolt ports and two USBs, so
yeah.
I imagine a more busy computer. Like, my computer's not very busy right now. I just have the Duet and the MagSafe plugged in. So I don't really have to worry about anything. And as you know, I managed to free my computer from the snares of Backblaze long enough to get this call going.
That's good. I'm glad you could make it.
I went for the restart. I turned off the computer. I turned it back on again. It fixed the issue.
Hopefully it fixes it permanently.
I know, 99% of the time, I would say, if I had to put some idea to it. Okay, so back to my setup here. I have the vanity drive, which is fine. And then I partitioned my 6 terabyte GTEC drive USB 3. Partitioned that. I gave another terabyte for Time Machine, just to have another Time Machine going, just for the shits and giggles. And then I have used the other 5 terabytes as my archive space. So whenever I'm done like editing something big on my internal SSD, I send that over to the archive, which, as you should be thinking, Jacob and dear listener, that's not a backup anymore. Once it leaves your internal SSD and goes somewhere else and is not in two places at once, that's not a backup anywhere. that's not a backup anymore. Mm-hmm. So what you have to do after that is you need to go offsite.
Right. And offsite in your experience can include Backblaze.
There's two ways you can do it. You could get like some kind of drive that encompasses all your stuff. And like, I was doing trade-offs at my mom's at the first place up in Boston. Like, whenever I go up to Boston, I would bring a drive to bring over to her, and I would leave that drive at her place and then take the drive that I had left there prior to that and just swap them out essentially every trip. I knew that if my apartment burnt down, like, do that. Find someone that you trust. Encrypt your drive if you have to, if it makes you feel better, and give them a backup of your computer. Tell them to put it in like a safe or something like that in their house or just like let them have it. That way, if your apartment burns down, if someone robs you, which are two things that can happen a lot in my city, not to me personally, but to people I know, then, you have something somewhere else. The alternative to that, which is what I do now, is getting an online backup solution that encompasses everything.
It's a ever-changing thing for you, though, because you're always looking at new drives. Like, we've talked about NAS and RAID,
yes.
And we've gone through all that whole thing before. Recently, I actually talked to Don Giller, who's the guy, I think I mentioned him to you once before. He's the guy who has like the late night archive. He has like every episode of Dave Letterman's show recorded. And recently,
is he the one that Pablo Hidalgo has been retweeting a lot? Or is that, he's not the one doing the Dave Letterman, like video VHS glitches, is he?
Oh, no, but I love that account.
Yes.
I like that account a lot. But no, Don Giller is he's easily one of my all-time favorite internet people. He's just this guy, a lot like me, who saves everything. And a long time ago, just got in the habit of recording late night and recorded every single episode. And so he has the largest collection of late night video anywhere. Like CBS is often coming to him and asking him for things and asking him questions about the show because he knows everything about it. But he recently finished digitizing his entire collection, which was previously on tape. And so he was asking around for some backup tips, and he doesn't trust anything cloud-based. So when I was suggesting to him that he do an offsite, I suggested like the safety deposit box and then also having a local RAID backup that would allow him to have like redundant drives.
Oh, redundant. Yeah. That's, I mean, if you are paranoid about cloud, which is that's fine.
That's fair.
I mean, like, why not? Like, is he paranoid about security, or is he paranoid about it failing?
Probably the security of, you know, this is a very unique collection that has a very high value. If not for content, then for time, you know, he put a lot of time into this. So,
right. He should be the only one that gets credit for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. In his instance, I think, some sort of like actual hard physical copy backup would be a good solution, but who do you leave that with? You know, even if you encrypt the drive, like I still feel like that would be kind of like a strange thing to leave with somebody else. Your mom, probably okay. You could probably trust
your mom. If you encrypt the drive, it's fine. Like nobody's going to break, you know, file vaults, and none of my friends that are going to break file vault that I, you know, roll with.
I suppose if it was something really important, you could put it onto a micro drive and sew that micro drive into like a teddy bear, and then give that to your significant other or your.
Is this the plot of Mr. Nanny starring Hulk Hogan?
I don't know why you'd ask me that question.
They
but you know, just as like a safe thing, because you know it's not going to be something they throw away because it has sentimental value. Little do they know that they're actually
carrying it the whole time.
Yeah,
wow.
They've got some.
We should see how many Mr. Nanny references we can tie into this show over the course of.
You're
going to
be alone in that. I've never seen Mr. Nanny, and
you just
spoiled
the end of Mr. Nanny.
Oh, you spoiled the end of Mr. Nanny. I've never seen the damn thing, and you told a bunch of people who have probably never even heard of that movie. Or
guys,
show.
I'm sorry.
What is this?
To all our listeners,
Hulk
I'm
Hogan?
Really sorry.
No, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, Hollywood Hulk Hogan. Ever heard of him?
Yeah, brother.
Oh, man.
Hey, do you ever get any more correspondence from our friend Bill Gates?
No, and I'm bummed about it because as I retweeted to you on Twitter, Wint, king of weird Twitter, also received Bill Gates. And it looks as though they're in talks from the screenshot that I sent you. And that was really frustrating for me to see.
Oh, because you replied and you got nothing back.
I mean, I guess I wasn't as direct. Wint, I imagine, went on quite, you know, a tirade or, you know, engagement with Bill and Melinda Gates or the foundation or whoever, you know, might have been behind that. You know, I did get an email. Who did I get from today recently? It's gone forever. I don't know. It was somebody from South Africa. They had also emailed. They were very upfront about it, though. They were like, oh, this is South Africa. Like, we're emailing you now. We have some money for you. I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. It wasn't even a prince. It was just somebody who's like, I'm with the South African Trust. So
I was going to say, I've noticed that Google has a prejudice against South African princes. Have you noticed that?
Like, you're seeing a reduction in your South African or your princes that are
emailing
you?
Yeah, they all end up in spam. I'm not really sure what Google has against the monarchy.
Well, it's probably your own spam settings. I would check those because like you can set your spam folder reject anybody who's not in your address book.
You know what the problem is? I'm seeing it right now. I had a filter set up for any instance of Prince because people were emailing me about the artist formerly known as Prince and I was getting tired of it. And so I filtered those out. So that makes sense. I'll get that fixed.
Okay, that's good. I mean, that must have been really annoying for you.
Well, yeah, I hate to dig through because you know you're digging through all the boner pills and free software licenses and things like that. So watches, okay. Get a lot of stuff for watches.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, stuff that men need.
Stuff that men need as a
boner
man.
Pills,
watch?
Watches, and software.
You wear
watch.
An Apple Watch, yeah.
Gen Zero.
I don't wear them. I can't believe you're still wearing one of those things.
Why?
Not like an Apple Watch in general, but just like a Gen Zero. Like, the thing can't even run the new stuff, can it?
I don't know. Or care.
You don't care?
No, I use my watch for two things now. I use it for notifications. It's great for that. And I use it for a calendar. Like, if I want to see like what's coming up on my schedules for the day. That's it.
Okay, yeah, I guess that's a good reason. I tried one on for like 2 weeks, and I wore it. Erin has tried to push hers on me multiple times. Mm-hmm. Every time I've rejected it after 2 weeks, because it's just so annoying. And I know it's like, oh, you can turn the notifications off. And I'm like, okay, but why am I wearing it?
Well, like, what do you mean? Why is it so annoying? Are you just getting too many notifications?
I mean, yeah, but and no, but I know the rebuttal to that is like, oh, just turn on Do Not Disturb, or like turn off notifications for messages. But like,
well, no, I wouldn't say that at all.
I'm just wearing a watch. Then yeah. What would you say? What would your rebuttal be?
Well, I wouldn't say turn off the whatever or turn on Do Not Disturb at all, because I mean, for me, the whole point of it being useful is so that I can get those notifications. I think that if the notifications are annoying you on your wrist, it's probably an indication that you're getting too many. And that you need to...
Well, no, it's just text messages. Just being... Having a text message show up on my wrist at all. It can be any text message.
Okay.
I don't get notifications to my phone. My battery... I've been going since 7 a.m. My battery is at 65%. I rarely go below 50% battery on my phone because I'm using it so little.
Oh.
Like, I'm not... Screen time is not my issue.
Oh, we should compare those sometime.
Our stats?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm game.
Yeah, mine's not even close to that good. I've charged. I've topped up today. I'm at 27%, and I haven't left my desk.
Damn, and you haven't left your desk. I've been naked sitting at my desk all day.
I put on pants so that I could go to the restaurant, but
yeah. Oh God. So today, my biggest battery drain has been phone.
Okay,
that's just today.
Oh, you're actually. Because, are we doing this now?
No, I was just doing it now. We can do it later when you have less embarrassing things using your battery.
It's going to be the same like any week. Where do I even find this? Oh, it's in settings. Okay.
Yeah, go to battery, and then you go down. Listeners, we encourage you to also examine your usage on your phone. I don't know about Android users, but...
So wait, what are we looking at here? Are we looking at today or last 7 days?
Today.
All right, today will be a bit of an outlier due to circumstances.
That's what I mean.
What are the interesting stats here?
I mean, just knowing what your usage is. If you tap on it,
by
you
category
can see
or by
no by app.
By app.
Yeah.
Ugh, okay. Most used today. Instagram. 2 hours and 14 minutes.
Wait, are you looking at screen time or battery?
Screen time.
Okay, I was looking at battery, but let's do screen time because it's probably a better indicator of how the phone's being used, because like a 15-minute phone call will do way more battery than like, you know, 2 hours on Instagram or whatever, depending on your settings. So screen time. Oh man.
Wait a minute. What just happened? I just backed out and then went back in and everything changed.
Well, it had to update. Mine changed while I was looking at it.
Yeah, right, but now I've just lost like all my stats for the day. Oh. I don't know why.
Oh, poor baby. I had today, my most used is news, 27 minutes in the morning.
Anything interesting happen?
In the news?
Yeah.
That dude, no, nothing interesting happened.
Were you going to say the How I Met Your Mother guy?
Who's that?
Josh Radnor.
What happened? Is he okay?
No, I think I think it came out that he has cancer.
Oh, that sucks.
At least that's what I was told over dinner today. I don't know if that's true.
I didn't hear that at all, but my thoughts and prayers. No, I usually just watch Seth Meyers through the news app because some entertainment feed will just show me his closer look, and it's usually the best look at what just happened in the news.
Okay.
It was that
whatever I was told over dinner is not true. I just Googled how I met your mother cancer, and there's nothing here. So
that like a whole like Steve from Blue's Clues is dead thing? That's what that was?
Probably. That's upset because that kind of all right, well, that's good.
Thoughts and prayers regardless to anybody. That's not what was in the news this morning was that Virginia governor, right?
Oh yeah, Northam. Yeah, that's a whole mess. That's a mess.
Seth Meyers got him good. I didn't watch anybody else, so I'm sure everybody else made funny jokes. Okay. But holy
we'll have to compare the screen time some other time. I don't know what happened. Like I had my full day stats, and now I only have the last hour, so I don't know what happened.
Is it? It's because of the time zone difference that doesn't actually exist.
I don't know. But,
you flipped over to midnight, right? That's what the time zone is in Ohio.
It's nine. Right? It's 9 p.m. I'm behind man. We're in the same time zone, but
I know that's the joke, is that you're always on the same time zone as me, but I always think it's a different time zone. And the fact that you would be ahead of time for me would be even funnier if I thought that. I like it a lot. I'll keep that going.
I did see my friend from Australia is on Skype. They're away, but I saw their little dot there. I thought it'd be fun to pull them in if they were online. But
what time is it there? Let's look at my clock, my world clock, that is. World clock. Oh, damn it. I don't have Australia.
According to Google, it is noon.
Adelaide, Australia. It is 12:42 p.m. in Adelaide.
Oh, interesting. It's 12:12 in Brisbane.
It is a large continent, that Australia, I've been told.
Yeah, but their time zones are split by a half hour.
Oh, well, that's also weird.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's like when we do like daylight savings in... What state doesn't do daylight savings? Arizona? Is like fully out.
Oh yeah, they're not observing it anymore. I thought we were supposed to flip to that this year. I thought there was like a big push to just end it.
I don't think anybody's ever gonna do it. The farmers, man. The farmers have control. They're the real power holders in this country. Did you ever read about the proposal to put like Massachusetts and a lot of like the Northeast in what's it called? Like, I think it's not. It's the. Like the same time zone that Canada uses.
See, that would make sense to me. I always felt that there should be one more time zone on the East Coast, just on the edge.
How cool would that be? That'd be great. It would make things awful if like Boston and New York were in a different time zone.
Yeah, they should be in the same. But I think like it should be an uneven time zone that that just kind of follows the coast a little bit. I mean, it's going to be inconvenient anywhere that there's a line, but I think with most of the East Coast, it could fit.
Yeah, it was like the Nova Scotia time zone or something like that. Like we could squeeze in most of the Eastern, like, but then that would put like Quebec over there. Interesting. Whatever. I'm all for changing it up.
Yeah, I thought it'd be cool to get rid of, but someday. Man, I don't know. Today's a weird day. I've been off since I woke up, and I can't figure out why. I woke up feeling weird. I haven't been able to focus on anything today. And as a result, I just feel very scattered and very foggy. You ever have like a foggy day?
I have so many of those days. It's rare that I don't have one of those days now. Yeah,
man. Poor you. Yeah, I don't know. I woke up strange.
What time did you go to bed?
No, actually a fairly normal time. Last night I finished my math homework early, and I think we probably fell asleep by like 10:30, 11.
Okay, that's normal, I would say. That's better than like your normal graveyard hours, which is like 3 a.m.
Yeah, I cupped that habit during break because I was spending so much time relaxing during the day that I didn't have to stay up late to do any relaxing.
Yeah, that's true. Like you didn't have school to go to or homework to do. So you just like, you get to 9 o'clock and you're like, well, I guess I'll go to bed.
Well, but here's the thing. We've been watching Survivor recently, right?
Oh God.
So we'll watch like 2 episodes of Survivor on the couch. We'll have, you know, dinner, watch some Survivor, watch another episode. And then May usually wants to go to bed at that point because she has to work early in the morning. So I say, okay, we can go watch one more in bed. And so we'll watch like a third one in bed, or we'll end up just watching Frasier and then I'm in bed. And so I'll watch Frasier for, you know, 3 episodes until Netflix says, are you still there? And I'll say no. And then I'll fall asleep listening to My Brother and Me. But the past couple of weeks being back in school, I don't think I've made it halfway through an episode of Mabim Bam before falling asleep. It's great. But this morning, I don't know. I don't know if I don't feel tired. That's the thing. I just feel so foggy, unable to focus.
Get too much sleep. That's one thing. What time did you wake up?
At first I woke up at about 8:30 because somebody across the street I think a child at the elementary school was hitting a pole with a stick repeatedly for about a half hour.
Yeah, that sounds like a kid thing to do.
And it could have been something more automated, but man, it was persistent.
That's so crazy.
I fell asleep again for like another probably like hour or so. Woke up about 9:30, 10.
Damn.
Just about right for me. So I don't know.
So that's 12 hours of sleep?
Almost? No.
If you went to bed at 10:30? So like 10, 11 hours of sleep?
Yeah, I guess so. You'd think that I'd wake up bright-eyed.
You might have overslept, man.
Maybe. I don't know. It's disappointing, though. Like, you know, it's not a school day. So I was able to sleep in a little bit, which I like to do. No rush. But then when I wake up, I'm like, okay, I got stuff to do. And this morning I was woken up and I was immediately greeted with like some weird Frank Ocean news, and a bunch of stuff went down with that today. So after that was kind of all wrapped up, I was like, okay, let's do some work. And it was just one of those things where, you know, you're replying to somebody's email and you're typing it up and you got a really good response going. You're like, okay, I'm nailing it today. And then you read back through your email before you hit send, and you typed the first half of one sentence and the second half of the other sentence, but you left out a whole bunch in between. That's not right. Like, there's like a memory leak or something in my brain. So I worked for like an hour and a half with a pretty slow pace. And I decided this is not worth mine or the company's time. So called off from that. And I thought, you know what? Maybe I just need to chill out, focus on something that I'm not like actively doing, and I'll just watch a movie. So I started watching that movie, The Sisters Brothers. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't.
It's a new like Western picture with John C. Reilly and Joaquin Phoenix. Also has Riz Ahmed and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Wow, that sounds so good.
Yeah, so far I think it's really good. I say I think.
Okay, wow, slow glowing review. It sounds good. It looks good.
I think it's good because
he thinks it's good. Folks.
Everything appears to be good about it, but I don't know. I couldn't focus. I kept having to rewind spots, and I'm watching it. I'm like actively watching the movie, but I kept having to rewind because I couldn't figure out.
Because you're so foggy.
Yeah, it's so strange. So this might be a weird episode. And I realized when we were eating dinner today, like, May was like, man, you don't seem right. I'm like, no, I don't feel right today. I remembered that we had to record. I'm like, oh shoot, we got to get going pretty soon. I got to record with Mike. She's like, oh, okay. And then I remembered that I thought this week we were supposed to record two episodes to make up for that week when I'm going to be gone. But I think we can do that next week, right?
Probably.
Okay.
We can do it any week. It doesn't matter.
Well, it's going to have to be this week or next week. And I thought, man, I think it's going to be hard to get, because I initially thought maybe we'll be able to call it early this week. I'm feeling a little weird. Maybe we can just make it an hour long episode. But then I thought, oh, geez, I think we were supposed to do two-hour long episodes. I don't think I could do 4 hours tonight. So we don't have to do that tonight. But yeah, we're going to have to grab some topics off the list because I don't know. I don't have anything pattering around in my brain.
I don't think it'll be hard to pick. I really don't think it'll be hard to think of something to talk about. Like, the backup thing happened today because my brother called me in a panic while I was at work. And he's like, I'm freaking out, man. I'm freaking out. I'm like, what's wrong? Tell me what's going on. And he's like, I'm having an anxiety attack. Like, I just realized none of my stuff is backed up. And
oh,
he's like a graphic designer. He just realized like suddenly that after he was finishing his projects to free up space on his MacBook, he was just taking his stuff and moving it to external drives. And as we demonstrated earlier in the show, if you do that, it's not a backup anymore. There's no backup. Just moving it to an external drive is not a backup. So he just realized that suddenly, and he realized that his Time Machine backups that he was making, they were just, you know, if they bump themselves out, his old work, the backup of his old work, just goes away if it gets bumped out because the Time Machine fills up. So yeah, he was just like freaking out. He's like, what do I do? What do I do? So I basically just ran him through the first 15 minutes of this podcast and just kind of told him what the setup should be. But it's incredible.
What's his situation right now? He's not traveling anymore, right? Because he was kind of remote.
He's based in Charleston right now.
Okay.
He was in Hawaii until the new year. And then in January, he came back to Charleston.
Back to the real world.
The Land of the Dead, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Charleston specifically, but just, you know, the mainland.
He was a great follow for that year on Instagram.
He still is. He's still posting. He has terabytes of pictures from the surf and everything.
Yeah, are the surf pictures current or are those from before?
I think those are still like latent uploads.
Okay.
I mean, he was shooting a whole bunch, so he's probably got a whole great load of stuff. It's really good.
Well, I'm glad you were able to fix that for him. I think he would be a good guest on the show. I know you said you didn't have a microphone, but maybe at some point we can have him on.
Yeah, I'll just send him I'll buy him a Yeti or something. No, I won't. I hate Yetis.
I can send him mine.
No, that would be my nightmare. That's like it following me around. It's
dude,
like,
they're not bad mics. I don't know.
It's a curse. Yours is bad, I will say.
It's not bad. It's my house is bad. We've talked about this. The house is bad. It's not shielded. Like I don't have grounding on anything in my home.
I mean, you sound fine now.
I'm not using a Yeti.
I know. The point is the Yeti sucks.
All right. So the Yeti is bad in my circumstance, but all right. Get off that. Let's get off that. Related podcasting talk, though. I wanted to bring this up to you because we haven't had a chance to really talk about it. But I'm sure you've been reading these articles talking about Spotify's potential bid on Gimlet.
Yeah, man.
$230 million, is that right?
I thought it was 200 million, but what's
$50 million,
you know?
I heard another recent account from Nick Kwa, the Hot Pod newsletter. He said that he talked to somebody who thinks that it's closer to 230, but still big chunk of change for a content house.
Well, good for them.
You think it's happening? You think they're gonna go through with it?
I mean, I don't know. I guess we're all just going to end up working for Spotify, whether it's music or podcasts. So what does it matter?
Well, you're a fan of Gimlet, right? Like you follow their business.
I am a huge fan of Gimlet. Yeah.
This is like a pretty big move for Gimlet and for podcasting at large. Like it's a big story.
I don't know about Gimlet. It's fine.
You think it's fine?
That they might be selling?
Yeah.
I think it sucks to have your shit on display in that way. Not like your podcast. I mean like your business on display.
Hmm.
Like, I guess, who was trying to make the case for Apple buying Gimlet?
Justin Jackson from Product People and Transistor.
Did he have a compelling argument?
Yeah, I mean, I think he made some good points. Maybe I can link to those in the show notes. But he makes a lot of good points. Like they're working towards, Apple is presumably working towards, you know, this big streaming service that could potentially encompass not just music, not just video, but premium podcasts and audiobooks. Like they have the directory for this. They have the, you know, the full gamut of everything that you'd want in a streaming service. And as a result, they'd be the ideal place to absorb somebody like Gimlet, who already has this wealth of not only podcasting content but also video content, because they've branched out into TV last year with the Homecoming series. So
that was really surprising how good that show was.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I still haven't watched it, but
it's worth a watch.
That wasn't something I initially thought of when Spotify came up as a buyer. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, I think
it makes sense for podcasting, but
yeah. I mean, if they can keep it up. I think that the bummer part about Homecoming was that so many people listened to the podcast and were like, well, why would I watch a TV show of something I already listened to and was kind of unenthralled by? Because, I mean, like, for every like step that Gimlet made with Homecoming in terms of like bringing in A-list talent, pretty great script writing and great sound design, I mean, normally you don't have that kind of talent in fictional podcasts. You have really great voice actors, don't get me wrong, like the Message and all the other things have had pretty great to, you know, amazing voice actors, but you don't know any of them. Like they brought in like Catherine Keener for that. They brought in Oscar Isaac, you know, like
Chris Gethard.
Yeah, it was massive. I don't know if Chris Gethard belongs up there with Oscar Isaac and Keener, but you know,
sure,
we love
he
him
does.
All the same.
I mean, I think he does.
Okay. Did you hear him in the Wolverine podcast?
No, I still haven't listened to that.
I like that he's just bringing himself into all the fictional podcasts.
I know.
Just like
He's a good voice actor, in my opinion. I think he's
great. He does have a really great voice. And yeah. I think, yeah. I mean, he's probably been on like Bob's Burgers, right? You would know better than
me. Oh, I don't know, but he definitely should be.
I mean, yeah, he's got such a good voice, like for characters and whatever.
Yeah, but I get your point.
Yeah, my point is that, you know, Gimlet did a lot with something like that we didn't expect to see. And it was still just like a very middle, like as far as enjoying that show, I was like, okay. Like that happened. I didn't really feel like it was enthralling. And then I watched it on Amazon, and it was just like way better. Mm-hmm. And my group chat was just like, I guess the moral of this is that like fictional podcasts suck. Like, is that the moral of it?
It may just be the new way to pitch a movie.
Well, I guess, but I would counter that with, did you listen to the other Gimlet show, sticking on Gimlet here, the Horrors of Dolores Roach?
No.
I think that was the name of it?
No.
That was excellent.
Was that?
Fiction. Yes.
I listened to the first couple teaser, like the character teasers, but...
It was very... I mean, like, it's love it or hate it. You might hate Dolores as a character. You know, and it's got, you know, Bobby Cannavale. I don't know anybody else that was in it besides them. Mm. But I think that's because it evolved as a one-woman show, I want to say. Or like it evolved as like a very small performance, I guess. Not anything large. And so I think it was already confined to like a very small area. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, okay, we just have to put this in a recording studio now. And just like the way it really played into the sound design thing really well, and the voiceover narration worked better than any other podcast I've listened to that's fictional. So I don't know if you're into fiction podcasts and you don't mind some like really messed up stuff, because the subject matter is like it goes from like 0 to 60 in like one episode.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, but oh yeah, Horrors of Dolores Roach for anybody who's a Gimlet fan and hasn't checked it out yet.
Yeah, and there was Sandra too, and you know, it was fine. I would listen to another season of it because it was a pretty quick listen. I think. I mean, there was only a couple episodes, but
I forget how it ended. We don't have to talk about how it ended, but right. I just feel like it left me with a similar feeling to Homecoming, where I just kind of like, oh, that I guess that was an abrupt stop to this, you know, like I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you know, this is kind of interesting. I'm looking at a bunch of the Gimlet shows, like they're bingeable shows. Sandra is a good example. I don't know if Dolores Roach did that all come out at one time.
No, okay. I don't believe so.
That unfolded over some time.
I think it was weekly. Well, because they also did a rollout for Alexa. They integrated that. This is again tying into your Gimlet like spiel about how they are the whole package. They did an interactive thing with Alexa, the Amazon Alexa, and like a kind of a choose your own adventure thing with that show. Like, they're venturing into, like, I guess that territory that, it's not AR, right? It's, what do you call it, like, interface?
Interactive. Like, it's more of like an interactive listening story. Yeah, it's almost like I don't even know if it's like choose your own adventure, but yeah, kind of like the Bandersnatch thing.
Okay, yeah, so it's like that kind of interactive media, I guess. So, you know, but for a podcast, that's maybe a first? I don't know.
There have been a few shows that have done that. I'm not sure. Which was the first? I think is it the Daily that's doing that now? They're gonna have like a new digestible episode or something, like a new like Alexa integration specifically to get like the day's news or something.
I don't know, but I do remember you or somebody else sharing something about that.
Yeah,
to me.
That's kind of interesting. But I'm looking at Gimlet's new show, which I haven't listened to yet. It's called Conviction. They released all of their episodes in one go, and it's like a 7-parter, not unlike Sandra. So I think it's interesting because a few weeks ago we were talking about piloting a podcast, and when you start your podcast, how many episodes you should record before you actually release anything. And in our case, we did like 5. Like basically, we recorded, I mean, not that it has the same level of production by any means, but we almost recorded an entire season's worth of a Gimlet show before actually launching. It's kind of a...
Granted, we had no game plan and no continuity between them.
No planning, no continuity, no production value.
It's like there's no reason that anybody would anticipate it week over week, but we were like, we didn't dump them all in the feed at once.
Yeah. I like that so much, though. I wish I had a reason to do a project that would require, or that would allow me to drop everything in one go like that. Like, I love the drop. I love when you put something new out and you're able to capture that initial excitement and at the same time feed them. Because when somebody hears about something new, they get excited. They want to, you know, they want to follow you on Twitter. They want to subscribe to your show. And most importantly, they want to listen to your show. And that excitement's going to taper off after you've been going, you know, after like you leave them hanging for that first episode. And maybe you can give them a first episode or give them a teaser. And that's like a little something. But when you can give them that entire season in one go, they're much more likely to listen all in one run, which is a really cool and exciting thing, because that is the potential to, you know, get more shares. And there's just like this whole level of
well, it's a push. It's about the push rather than like the word of mouth. Like think of it in terms of like Netflix, you know, how that has changed the game for television.
Yeah.
And how few shows now are like doing the week by week thing. You know, like Escape at Dannemora came out week by week and they didn't really like, I don't know. Like I feel like it was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And it, but it didn't have like the hit, like it didn't have the punch that like I feel like comes with some Netflix series, where they're all just dumped at once and you binge them. Like mm-hmm. it's
well compared to Maniac, which is an example of another show that we both watched. You know, like Maniac, you get into it and you're like, oh man, I want to keep watching. Like this is great.
Yeah,
I want to keep going, and you can. And when you yes. can, you're more likely to get it all digested in one go. And I think it's easier to talk about the thing as a whole when it's all fresh. If I was watching Dannemora week by week, not that the show is that long, it would have been different than if I had just watched all of the episodes in, you know, the course of 3 days. It's a much different thing. And I think it's like, better for the content maker, because I know what I'm talking about. And if I can tell somebody about it and tell them how great it is and like give them all this excitement that's, you know, still flowing through my body as a result of finishing this thing, it's awesome. But I
wonder how much of that has to do with like selling advertising and that whole concept of making something versus the art. Because like, I mean, the week over week advertising thing, like so many sitcom formats that are still on like the major networks or whatever, like they have an order, 24 episodes a season, and they have to fill up those spots in between. Like they have to fill up those commercial breaks with advertisers. That's what they're doing. That's how they finance these shows. But with Netflix, like I almost feel like I don't want to knock the shows that do the regular advertising method and like the you know, the weekly release thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, there are probably some shows out there that are not just procedurals that like you do have to wait for every week. I mean, like Game of Thrones, I guess, is one of them, you know. Mm-hmm. like Mad Men was one. Like they're like, I mean, it's pop culture and pop television, but like I think Mad Men was like, you know, good. Like I dare say call it like art, you know, like it's TV and it's like, you know, bubblegum sort of, but like they, you know, it's like Sopranos, like these are all weekly things. And, you know, HBO is not focused on selling advertising, maybe in some weird way that HBO does, but like, you know, there's no ads that I can see. Whereas, you know, something on Netflix, like Maniac, you said, like, I felt like that project was like, that guy had an idea for a movie and it was, you know, like, he's like, oh, this movie is going to be 6 hours unless I break it up into 6 or 7 episodes. And Netflix is like, yeah, we'll do that for you. Why not? I just wonder like where the evolution of both ideas, like the binge idea versus the spreading it, like slowly disseminating a story to somebody.
Oh, they're different platforms, right? Like Dannemora came out on what network?
Showtime.
Okay. Came out on Showtime, which is a network. Like theoretically they could drop it on the Showtime app, which would be, more.
They did.
Well, but all in one
week
go?
Week by week. No, week by week they would do it. The same way the HBO would do. You know,
okay, like but those shows are also being shown on TV to people with cable subscriptions.
Right.
Which is where they're getting advertising dollars as well. It's an entirely different model. Yeah.
What's the model for HBO as far as like they're making money from subscribers? They don't need advertisements because people are paying for their service. Like ABC gets money from advertisers because they're part of, you know, that's just who they are.
Yeah, like, but you could also, there's also a service that you can pay for with ABC or CBS, like any of these.
That's how they finance Star Trek Discovery.
It may be, I don't know.
But they're trying to pay the way for new Spock.
I mean, I'm not a cable subscriber. Like I don't have any television really. So I don't know how it works, but I assume that even though it's a cable station, like a premium cable station, that there are still advertisements on the station, right? Like they're not just going from
on HBO.
Yeah, do they not
No, there's no advertisements.
No ads.
That's the point. Have you never? You've never had HBO in any
never
home
had
or
it.
No friends with HBO.
Dude, no. I didn't even have cable.
I never had it.
Well, at my
I had
dad's house. My dad still doesn't have cable.
Well, good for him. But no, I mean, I never had like those premium channel subscriptions, but I had friends with it. And yeah, I mean, it's just show after show. There's like the only commercial you'll get is like an HBO commercial for an HBO series. That's
well,
just the way it works.
I guess it's
those
still
are premium channels.
I guess it's still like, they're still, it, since it's an aired thing, like Netflix doesn't broadcast over the airwaves or over a cable line. So I guess they're still competing at time slots, and there's this whole level of like network television that I don't
understand. It's the internet that made the difference. It's on demand and internet that made the difference, because before this, before on demand, I think on demand was like pre, like Netflix was still doing DVDs when I was watching on demand movies through my cable subscription when I was a teenager, you know? So like the ability to, you know, watch stuff on demand is really what changed the game and like changed the way we make stories. There's probably a million better people to talk about this subject than us, but
TiVo
as well.
There's on demand, but there's also TiVo.
Right. Yes, because you could just, you know, tape everything.
Yeah, theoretically you could binge it on one
but it matters on how the people around you are watching it too, because like you know, it's the spoiler idea, you know, you don't want to.
Yeah, you know, that's probably one of the reasons that Game of Thrones is so big, because if you talk to people about what the biggest, like the best all-time TV shows are, the ones that most people have collectively seen are probably shows like Game of Thrones or
Sopranos,
Mad
Wire,
Man, all of those, Breaking Bad. And were any of those shows Netflix or Hulu exclusives? No.
No.
Because they had that breathing room between each episode for the week to week. So maybe there's something still to that. I don't know. It's not the way that I prefer to absorb
well,
media,
I mean,
but
we'll
I guess
see that
I also
April.
Like to watch more. Like I like to watch more stuff. And even with the TV shows that were on TV, like Ray Donovan is a good example of that. I wouldn't watch Ray Donovan until the entire season was over. And then I would just binge it because there wasn't anybody I was going to talk to about
it. Nobody was spoiling it.
Yeah, nobody was spoiling it. And like, I didn't want to like waste my time every week trying to seek it out, make sure that I had the time to watch it whenever it was on, or, you know, all of that mess. So
I guess if it's a show that you can like keep to yourself, and that if your social circle is small, but like, I don't know, it's a weird thing. 'Cause I do love, like I loved, I guess as much agony as I was in at the end of like a season of Breaking Bad, or like at the end of a week, any episode in Breaking Bad. And I'd be like, oh my God, how is it going to turn out? Like it's such a good feeling. Like, but also the best feeling is finishing an episode on Netflix and being like, oh, I can just go to the next thing right now.
Yeah.
Like, usually it's time. Like, I blew through the seventh season of Game of Thrones. I'm caught up in Game of Thrones now, so we can talk about Game of Thrones now.
Oh, cool.
I'm caught up, and I blew through season seven in, like, maybe a week, I think.
That's fast.
It took me a year and a half to do seasons one through six, because I was so unenthralled with the show. Forgive me for feeling that way, but, like, I was. And then finally we hit season six, and I was like, all right, here we go. I can get into this. And then season seven, you know, I'm like,
that show does get a lot more bingeable over time. I had a really hard time getting through, I'd say probably the first three seasons. I couldn't watch more than two episodes in one sitting, because it's just a lot. Like, there's a lot of characters, there's a lot of talking.
It feels
it's a lot to,
so
like,
bad.
Absorb. But then once you get in a couple seasons, like season four, things start speeding up. There's less talking, there's more action, there's less characters, which I think is a benefit to the show.
It's a plus and a minus there in the less characters department. I don't know. Like, I made a joke about Game of Thrones. I was like, to my group of people, because I was like, oh, I'm caught up on Game of Thrones now, and somebody said something unrelated, I guess, or about Game of Thrones, and I was like, I didn't even know who Jon Snow was until like season five, and everyone's like, are you fucking kidding me? And then just treating me like I was an asshole idiot for, and it was an exaggeration, but the truth to that story is that the truth to that exaggeration is that 6 months ago or a year ago or however long it was, my friend sent a picture of himself into the group chat, Nick, and he sent a picture of himself wearing a chain around himself. And he's like, I was dressing up like a Meister today. And I was like, what's a Meister? And someone's like, what season of Game of Thrones are you on? I'm like, season two. They're like, are you kidding me? You're on season two and you don't know Meisters? And I was like, and that was dead serious. That was not a joke. 100% not a joke. The Jon Snow thing was. Although I have such a hard time remembering people's names.
It's a dense show. It's dense.
It is. It's
and,
really
you know,
dense.
For everybody who's like just getting caught up with Game of Thrones, there's 10 people who have watched it through two or three times.
Yeah.
It's.
I want to now. Like, now that I've caught up, like, after it finishes, and I think it's going to finish in... It starts April 14th and is six episodes in the new season, I think. Mm-hmm. The final season. So that'll put us June, first week in June, maybe? Mm. Last week in May that it finishes. So, like, I could spend the summer just rewatching the show. Mm-hmm. And Erin rewatched the show for me, you know, when I was watching it. She was all caught up.
I have absolutely no interest in that. It's so long. It's fine. Well, it's great TV, but I don't...
The thing is, like, there's so much you can learn. Well, because you know how I hate rewatching things. That's like my thing. I hate rewatching things. But for this, I feel it's important to rewatch the at least like the first season again, so I can remember who these people are. And like, so when I see Littlefinger come on stage or on screen, that I can just be like, oh, okay, that's who that guy is. Like, I know this dude's entire journey as I see him appear on screen. Mm-hmm. And, like, I can see Jon Snow and not, like, write him off immediately as the bastard or, you know, like, from the first season.
Right.
Like, you know, like, oh, this character's going to go a long way. He's going to, like, or whatever, you know, or he's going to matter.
Think about that as an actor. Being the guy who plays, what's his name, Kit Harington?
Yes, Kit Harington.
Imagine being him, signing on to the show, knowing full well that he's, like, basically a minor character for the first... half of the show, and then becomes pretty much the most important thing towards the end.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's like a big spoiler, but I think
anybody who watches the show for the first time, even knowing that going into it, like me going into it, I had no idea what was going to happen and how it was going to pan out, and it's still like it didn't matter to me. Like like knowing that he is an important person wouldn't have affected how I perceive the story.
Yeah, I think anybody even adjacent to it, though,
yeah,
like he's the biggest meme of the show, really. Like, have you ever seen anything?
I missed all memes. I have never seen any meme. We can talk off air about the memes that I missed. That Erin is just like, how did you not see this on the internet? I'm like, And the thing is, like, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah,
like I saw that meme. Like, I saw. Oh man, I can't say any because if I say the meme, it's just a huge spoiler. So I'm not going to say it. But yeah, like. There are things like after I saw them, I'm like, oh, that was what that was from. I just never put it together. Mm. It was just so stupid. But I'm glad I'm caught up because now I can't have it spoiled for me in the month or two that before the next season. They're already advertising. They've been advertising for the new season since late December, maybe mid to late December on the subways here.
Gotta keep people amped up.
Yeah.
It's a long gap, you know? It's like it's a long time.
4 months lead up time just to remind us about the show existing.
Yeah,
that's crazy. I wonder if it's going to be bigger than Sopranos, like as far as numbers involved.
I bet
yeah, man. I guess there's no online audience for Sopranos when it ended.
How long they've been hyping up the final battle?
Well, we don't know what the final battle is going to be yet.
We don't, but they've been talking about it for months and how long it took them to film it. And
I don't read the rumor mills, man. I have no idea what a final battle is. I don't know who it's going to be between.
Okay, I don't know if it's a final battle, but it's a big battle in the final season that apparently took a month just to film one episode.
Dude. Stop it. You're nuts. Killing me. See, now, this is it. This is like the week over week, the wait, the duration, what do you call it? The delayed gratification aspect of television still works. I don't think anybody's debating that. It's not it's not a mystery or a puzzle or like a surprise. That still works. But it's just like to contrast it with the ability to take in a whole piece of art in a quick amount of time. Like, it's nice. Both the fact that we have options is very nice. And I think
that variability is good.
I think that we have something for every creator, you know, like every director, every writer can decide like, I take that back. I wish that it was up to the writers to decide how their, you know, creations were release to people, you know, because like somebody could write a series. I'm trying to think like Freaks and Geeks, like that came out week over week, you know, week after week, and it got canceled after what, like two and a half seasons or one. It was really quick. You never watched it, right?
Of course I did.
Okay, I thought there's somebody I know that didn't watch Freaks and Geeks, and I thought it was you for a second.
I watched the follow-up show too.
Undeclared, which was not actually a follow-up.
It was a spiritual follow-up by
it was
the
Judd
same
Apatow,
creators.
And yeah. It had some of the same actors, but
that's right. Yeah. It was a spiritual successor. He tried something.
It was like
again.
A very late 90s, early 2000s.
I think the
like
reason
it
that
didn't
show
have
failed
that timelessness, or I guess Freaks and Geeks was definitely not timeless, but it did not have like the nostalgia factor because it was taking place in present day.
Yeah.
Undeclared was just,
yeah.
It was
but
fine.
It starred Charlie Hunnam. How do you say his name? Hunnam?
The one.
The guy from Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah. And also, I mean, the lead was the How to Train Your Dragon guy.
Jay Baruchel?
Yeah. Jay.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was the lead. Yeah. Yep. He was in it.
Yeah,
Seth Rogen
sure
was in it, right? Was it?
Yeah. I think he was in it too.
Or was he not? I forget.
No, I think he was. I think he appeared.
They put a lot of cool people in that. What were we talking about? Okay, I was talking about Freaks and Geeks. Like, right. Do you think that they would have preferred it come out like, you know, a Netflix series? Do you think it would have been better if they had the option?
No, I think it was still perfect for its time. I don't know what really failed that movie, but it...
I bet if you asked from a monetary perspective, I bet it paid more to have... Like today, I bet it pays more to have like a network release just because of the commercial stuff. Like Netflix, I think, is notorious for, you know, lowballing creators. Mm. And I guess that's the downside. That's where I wish the creator had the say in how they did it. Because like, number one, they could make money in whatever way. But number two, they could...
I don't think like, that... You know, it doesn't seem like they're lowballing them that much. Or if they are, they're giving them something extra that the normal studios wouldn't. I mean,
an audience is first.
They got Roma. Like, Roma's going to win probably, like, a lot of awards this year. It's going
to
win probably
most
of them. Roma
went to festival first, right? Before Netflix did it?
Oh, was it just a purchase?
I thought so. I don't know for sure.
In any case, like, that, you know, it's still a pretty, like, they're getting big movies that aren't just, you know, it's not just, like, the latest bingeable vampire content. It's something substantial and has like artistic
latest
value.
Bingeable vampire content.
Well, sure, you know what I'm talking about, like the
no,
genre.
I don't.
Show. Oh, come on! You were the one that was giving me a whole bunch of hell for watching Sabrina.
Oh well, I know. I mean, I think I just it's not something I'm into. But
you know
like,
what I'm
Aaron,
talking
Aaron
about.
Watches it. Yeah,
the genre bingeable thing. Like,
I guess,
there's
yeah.
a lot of stuff kind of in that vein. It's relatively pointless. It doesn't have...
Like Riverdale and
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, okay. I say vampire because that's been sort of like the thing for a long time with Twilight and all that.
Twilight? Wasn't that like 2007? Or
all right, fine. My references are a little outdated.
Yeah, I think the vampire thing went out with like the 2010, like 2011.
If I wasn't so foggy, I'm sure I could think of a more relevant vampire example to save my skin, but I'm just not going to argue about
whatever
it.
That MTV show is that we talked about. Whatever.
The Next Bus.
The Teen Wolf. Man. Mm.
Alien follow-up.
Oh, God, yeah. Did you get past that door?
No, I haven't played. I've been wanting to. That's been something I've wanted to do.
That's not a follow-up.
I know.
It's a bad follow-up.
I know. I'll have a bunch of homework to do tomorrow, so I'm not going to be able to do it then. But I'm hoping over the weekend I can make some more progress. But I noticed in my Plex library that the rips that I had of my Alien DVDs are really bad. And DVDs are not high quality. Like, I kind of forget this, but isn't, like, the maximum quality on a DVD, like, 480p?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know.
It's like terribly, terribly bad. And I kind of forgot this. I haven't touched a DVD in a long time. But I was looking at my rips and I'm like, oh, geez, these are awful. And they were basically ripped so that I could play them on my PSP a long time ago. And so I was like, I can't watch these. I want to show these to May, but I can't watch these. So then I dug through a whole bunch of boxes that I never unpacked when we moved, just full of my old books and DVDs, and I found a bunch of really cool stuff in there. But I was looking through the DVDs and I realized, wow, the maximum quality I can get from these DVDs isn't even good. So then I went on Amazon and I purchased a set of Blu-rays, like the anthology Blu-ray set for the Alien movies, because I you know, I want to have like the both cuts of each movie.
But are they in 4K?
I don't know. Maybe it comes with a UHD download or something. I could look at that. But then I realized, oh, I don't have a drive that can rip Blu-rays. Because I want to put these back on Plex, where I can watch them without having to dig out DVDs and or.
Well, how much Blu-ray. Is that? How much did that possibly cost?
What,
like a Blu-ray ripper?
$100.
Okay, that's like, you know, a Christmas present or birthday present.
I know my birthday is coming up, and it's literally the only thing I can think of to ask for. But it's such a weird gift, right? And I'm bummed because last year.
No, it's not a weird gift. It's a good gift,
I guess. But I'm gonna use it for this. These Alien Blu-rays that I purchased.
Mm-hmm.
Are the first Blu-rays I've ever owned.
Yeah.
And I will theoretically never buy another set. Okay, actually, I take that back. I only take it back because I'm looking at my bookshelf right now where I just noticed that I have the Star Wars Blu-ray set still in the cellophane wrapping because I actually don't...
Yeah, you have like seven versions of A New Hope on your Plex server.
And none of them have the dumb edits. So I do own a set of Blu-rays. I do take that back. I need to correct that with my friend Brandon as well. But okay, I have two sets of Blu-rays for my two favorite science fiction series. Mm-hmm. And these ones I want to rip. So I have both versions of each movie on my hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I'm never going to need that drive again.
No, because the thing is, like, if I've learned anything from following Twitter and outrage on Twitter, tech outrage, it's that physical media is very important. Like, didn't you hear all those stories in, like, December about, like, the guy whose, you know, DVD got taken off of, or, like, his Finding Dory or some shit got, removed from the iTunes store, and so he had to... reached out to iTunes, and iTunes was like, sorry, it's gone. And like everyone was just like raging. Yeah, like everyone was just like raging and being like, oh, you should never buy stuff from iTunes because, you know, it could just disappear one day.
Well,
and like,
is he renting it? Because if you purchase it, you like it's in your collection. You have it.
No, but if the rights get revoked, if there's a rights issue or something, it's gone from the store, then it's just gone.
Oh, that's horseshit.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's very hard to DDRM Apple Media. Not impossible, but it's a pain in the ass.
Oh, wow. Jacob, that's some...
Just saying.
Like, you're like elite hacksaw, buddy.
last year, I bought an external CD DVD... last year, I bought...
You're not cutting that out. You're not cutting that out. This is how this podcast goes. You're not cutting it out.
Adding
this is not
a
Bantha
note. Hour four. Last year, I bought a CD DVD drive. And now I'm bummed because I could have saved that $40 and just tossed in the extra 60, and I could have bought a Blu-ray drive that could have done all of it.
Let's put it on eBay. Just do what I do. Just sell everything again on eBay.
No.
Somebody will buy it. Somebody
yeah,
will buy
they
it.
Would, but they're not going to buy it for full price, and I'd still
no,
need
but
to buy
like,
another
that's
drive.
That's the idea of buying... Well, you get something back rather than just... going to nothing.
I use or this disk drive all the time. Like, it's actually one of the only things that stays plugged into one of the USB slots on my computer and sits here on my desk.
Really?
Yeah.
That often that it sits there constantly? I would have to dig that out of a drawer somewhere if I ever needed to use a CD again.
There is a spot
I'm
for
so
it
anti-CD.
On my shelf, but lately I've been using it a lot. I brought a bunch of my CDs back from my dad's house, and there's mm-hmm. a bunch of stuff on here that's not, you know, that I have on CD that are not available on streaming services. And last week I bought a CD from a band called Sally Boy, which I intend to rip to flack.
Wait, you bought a CD?
Yeah.
How?
CD baby, baby.
You're still able to purchase Sally Boy CDs?
If you go to Amazon.com and search for Sally Boy, So We Sing, you can buy a CD baby exclusive disc of Mike's old band.
That's insane.
Explicit. It says explicit. There's cuss words on this.
There are. I think I didn't write those songs.
So
maybe
yeah,
I did. I don't know.
I bought that, and then I bought the Jackson C. Frank collection because they don't have that available in its entirety anywhere, but it has all of his recordings. It's like, I don't know, it's probably like 70 some tracks or something on 3 or 4 CDs. And so I'm gonna rip those. I'm really excited to have that. And so I use this thing all the time. You're right, physical media is important.
It is. Well, I realized that the other day, well, definitely not the other day, it's probably like 6 months ago at this point. But Aaron was like trying to get me to watch this movie. Do you ever see Repo Men?
Repo Man?
No, Repo Men.
No. Is this like a TLC show?
No, this is definitely not what you think it is. It's okay. I'm trying to pull up a link for you. Repo Men. There it is. 2010 crime science fiction. Director Miguel Sapochnik. It sounds like a fake name.
Jude Law
starring. Yes.
Oh, sick. Oh, this is a great cast.
No. I mean, yeah, it's a great cast. It's a terrible movie, dude.
Oh, that's sad. Liev Schreiber.
I think we got like 30 minutes into it, and I was just like, I was being such an awful watcher of it, and Aaron was like, fine. But it was like pretty bad.
Was this something she had seen?
Yes, it was like one of her favorite movies.
Oh, everybody has like a pet favorite like that. Like, I don't really know how good iRobot is with Will Smith, but I like that movie a lot.
This is on a different level. This is like a different level of bad movie.
Okay.
Like,
I'm going to watch like this.
Okay. If you make it through the whole thing, power to you, but like, it's just a little ridiculous. That's not the point of my story. The point of my story is that Aaron had the Blu-ray of this movie, and instead of streaming it, we went and grabbed the Blu-ray and popped it in to the old PS4. And I was just like blown away how shitty the quality of everything else that I watch is. Like watching Game of Thrones, there's so many dark scenes on that show. And you know, all the artifact? Is it artifacting or artifacing or like, what's the verb? All the artifacts that appear on screen when the data stream is like, oh, we don't need that. It's all dark, so we can just make the rest of the TV black there. But these pixels kind of need a little bit. Like, we can get away with this section of screen being like giant pixels in this screen. Like, it's just all like algorithms and data coming in and, you know, devices and streaming services deciding how much information it can get away with sending to us. Like, what's the least amount of information it can send to my TV?
Yeah, it's all compressed.
In order to let me get the picture. Right. The compression sucks. And that's what I'm saying, is that, like, watching Repo Men on Blu-ray was the best at-home viewing experience visually that I've had.
Well, that's like why everybody's so excited about 4K streaming, because 4K streaming is basically the equivalent of watching a Blu-ray, because it's, you know, it's high quality, it doesn't have as much compression, there's not going to be as many artifacts, and you can get that currently by watching a Blu-ray. You don't have to... I'm not going to get into weeds on that, because I know that part of that, what I just said, is probably wrong. But you're right. Like, when you watch something from a Blu-ray disc, it's a dramatic difference. Like, I ended up downloading some Blu-ray rips of the Alien movies to put on my Plex server, because I want them on my Plex server, and I figure since I own them now, that should be fine, right? And even then, like, I was watching through them, I'm like, oh god, like, it's still not quite as high quality as I want it to be. So I can't wait to bust these Blu-rays out and turn on my PS4 and pop those in and see what they look like. But yeah, it's a great experience. I just don't want to have a large collection of DVDs somewhere in my house.
That's the thing, is space. Yeah. Like, after watching that Repo Man, I was like, oh man, I want more Blu-rays. But then I look around my apartment, I'm like, oh, I can't fit more Blu-rays. It's like, it's not an option. Well, but like, I would love to have, like, this is the thing, is like, we go on rants all the time about having stuff and how much it sucks. And it does suck. But like, imagine having the space for it, man.
Yeah.
And this goes back to the backup thing. Cause like, you know, like, if you lose your drive full, like, if your Plex server goes down tomorrow and your drives all die in a fire, god forbid, knock on wood,
I will lose my movie collection because I don't back it up,
right? And like, I mean, physical media will burn as well, you know, so that's not something, but I'm talking, but like, excluding fire, you know, or tornado or whatever you have, mudslide, like, that's, you know, I don't know, like, just the idea of physical media, it still is a nice concept. It's just like, what do you do with it is the part that keeps me like, oh, well, I can't do that. I just can't. Like, a CD collection. What? I just thought about it. Like, I regret my CD collection so much, but I don't regret the music. I wish that, like, as a teenager, I wish the teenage
Well, you can rip the CDs.
Had the option.
CDs.
I did rip most of them, okay. But like I was still, I could have bought most of them on iTunes, but like at teenage me was like, I need to go and buy this so I can have the CD booklet. You know, like the liner notes were so important to me.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's still why I buy vinyl. It's still why, like, I still buy CDs because I know that I know that this doesn't exist digitally anywhere, and I want to have a full lossless copy. Because I could probably find like an old 2009 Mediafire link that's somehow still active, and I could download a 192 kilobyte rip of this Midwestern pop punk band that I enjoyed along with 400 other people. But having that CD is special because it's kind of you know, it's an actual representation of the master, and it's probably better quality than that band even still has today, unless they still have a copy somewhere at their parents' house. It's an interesting thing. I could talk about archiving media forever, absolutely forever, because I think it's so incredibly
important. Can you talk about it for 30 more minutes?
Sure, if you want to, it's cool.
I mean, this whole episode has been talking about like physical media and like how we consume stuff.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just that I just think about like how much I wish that I could have like shaken my 13-year-old self and been like, you don't need to go to Best Buy with your friend Sarah, and both of you don't need to buy a copy of the Blink-182, or not even the Blink-182 album, the Plus 44 album. Number one, because that's a bad album and you shouldn't own that.
Oh, disagree.
Plus 44, I mean, it was fine. There was a couple of songs on there, but like...
Easily one of my favorite spinoffs.
I mean, like, you don't have a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot of spinoffs. There's Boxcar Racer. There's
Transplants.
Aquabats.
Aquabats is not a spinoff. They were before Travis.
I count them because they had Travis.
They're a related act. It's not a spinoff.
All right, fine.
Spinoff was like
Angels
after.
And Airwaves.
Spinoff, bad.
There's the new one with Alex Gaskarth from All Time Low.
What's that?
Oh, Mark has a new band.
What?
Yeah.
Again?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I think it's just him and Alex from All Time Low. I can't remember what they call themselves, but they put out a single.
That's like, so funny. Imagine like playing, because All Time Low looked up to Blink, you know, like they were not in same generation.
That was my comment when I got on Chorus to talk to some people about that. My first comment was, somebody get in a time machine, go back 10 years or 15 years and tell Alex Gaskarth about this, record the reaction and return, because he used to be in a Blink-182 cover band.
Well, they used to, like, Mark produced a lot of All Time Low's stuff in the beginning, right? Like,
no.
Eventually. But, like, he did, yeah.
Mid to late career.
Mid-career for who?
Yeah, they had already done, like, two or three records.
That's what I was asking. Yeah.
They'd done that.
Before pairing with him. Like, he had done, like, yeah. I think some of his Mark's early production stuff was it Motion City soundtrack? That was Mark.
That makes sense.
Not mid-career for him. I guess mid-career for him, depending on how you look at his career. Oh, man. I went into a YouTube.
Oh, he did the Atari, Simple Plan, Newfound Glory.
Who?
Like a lot of those early pop punk bands. Yeah.
Did he produce those, though, or did he just show up on them? Because he was definitely on Simple Plan. He guessed it on I'll Do Anything. He sang on that.
Oh,
that was
sorry.
A big deal. And then he played bass. The biggest slap in the face, the Newfound Glory's bassist, I think, I forget his name, Ian or something. He was that... Sincerely Me, I think, the like track two or three off of Newfound Glory's album, like they were their first big one, was like, is the it started with this really rad bass line, like doo 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 doo, like it really like a cool pop punk bass line, and I think Mark Hoppus played that bass line on the record. Imagine being the bass of Newfound Glory and be like, oh, we have this really sick bass line that you're gonna play at every single show, but on the record Mark Hoppus is going to play it. Is that any cool with that? It's just like, oh my God. Just take that.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I was looking at the Wikipedia page titled Mark Hoppus Production Discography, under which there's a subheading called Production Discography, under which there's a subheading, which I did not notice, called Guest Appearances.
Yeah,
underneath
okay.
that section, there's a producing
Boxcar
section.
Racer, he was on. He was probably on Motion City. He was probably on All Time Low.
Producing, he did Motion City soundtrack Commit This to Memory, which is a really... really classic record.
I remember
he did
when
matches.
He did that. Yes,
Socratic.
He loved the matches.
He did.
Good
he did
him.
Some Newfound Glory though. Yeah, he's got some good stuff in here.
Oh man, He is someone who I can't stand on Twitter, but like I'm just so happy that he exists in like life and that like his trajectory. I was like, I was the biggest Blink-182 fan. Like, ask anybody. Like, my friends, I was in high school on a senior. I went to Catholic high school. We've talked about this before, and I was on like a Christian service trip, for some reason, to New York City of all places, where I would end up. And my friends called me on the phone, like on my cell phone, my emergency cell phone, in the middle of one night, and we're just like, "Hey, Mike, are you okay? Are you sitting down?" And I was like, "What's wrong?" And they're like, "Blink-182 just went on hiatus," and it like ruined my time. But like, yeah, I mean, as a huge Blink-182 fan.
When was that?
That was 2004 to 2005.
Okay.
I think. Yeah,
boy,
it was February 2005, I think.
So when your favorite pop punk band was going on hiatus, mine was coming out to the world in a really big way.
Who was yours? All Time Low?
Fall Out Boy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they went on hiatus and ruined my life.
And then Blink-182 came back.
That's right.
And went on tour with Fall Out Boy and did a lot of shit with Fall Out Boy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Pop punk. How do we get from physical media to pop punk?
Blink-182.
I guess. I don't know what it was.
Oh, you're talking about
Plus 44.
To...
I was freaking out because I went to Best Buy once in college. I was in college. I wasn't even a 13-year-old. I was in college. I went to Best Buy with my friend Sarah. We took the bus from campus to Best Buy. We both bought a copy of the Plus 44 album. I bought the blue one. She bought the green one because they came out in different colors. No bonus tracks or anything.
Oh, yeah, bonus tracks. That was still a reason to buy media.
Bought two physical copies of this album, and I just don't even know. Like, I'm glad we weren't pirates about it, but, like, just get an iTunes account, you know?
Sure. Well, iTunes, I think, was only 192 kilobytes per second for a long time.
Yeah.
Which is something that I'm still dealing with because I've got a lot of old iTunes stuff. I have a lot of old CD rips where, you know, I was ripping CDs from the library at like 192 kilobytes.
I mean, kilohertz?
Kilobytes per second. That's the bit rate.
Oh. I thought, okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, I'm going through like all of my old libraries and compiling them. It's a never ending project, so it seems. But I've got all this old stuff and, some of it I could probably get again in, you know, better quality. But at the time, like, I wish I could go back, bring a couple of hard drives with me and hand them over to myself and say, "Hey, stop ripping stuff with Music Match Jukebox at 192 kilobytes per second, name them properly and use FLAC." And younger me would be like, "What's FLAC?"
Yeah.
I'd say
put it on your Pono, young Jacob.
I'd say, "Okay, here's XLD, which is a program you're going to use to rip things from now on." And
XLD? Good lord.
Well, actually, I don't know if XLD is the program I would have been able to give them because I don't think that had a Windows equivalent at the time. There's probably something. And yeah, like I just wish that I would have ripped some of those old demo tapes and old CDs and stuff in FLAC because I can't find them anymore. And I've been able to find a few. Discogs is good for that. Like, I've been able to track down some copies of things that I couldn't, you know, normally find today. Cartel is a good example. I had a spell recently where I was going through Cartel's discography and making sure that I had everything in good quality. And I couldn't find a good rip of their initial release of their debut album. I know it was re-released by like Epic or somebody after they bought the rights from Militia Group when they put out their second album, but the first one had completely different takes of songs. They completely remixed a couple of the songs on that album, and I wanted the old one. And Discogs, of course, had a copy, so I bought it. And then when I brought back a bunch of CDs from my dad's house, I found out, oh, I already had this on digital media. I'm glad I paid $25 for a CD on Discogs that I already own. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I just feel like there's this big responsibility on my shoulders that nobody else is putting on me but myself, because all of this media exists in my hard drives and on these CDs that have been given to me over the years. And I don't know, in some cases this stuff doesn't it may not exist elsewhere. Or if it does, people don't understand the value of it, like the sentimental value that it might even have to the people who recorded it, because those people don't have it anymore either, you know?
I mean, yeah, you've been on a quest to capture everything I've ever done.
You have no idea how upset I was to find that Sally Boy has been on Apple Music, and I had no idea.
I asked Ben, I was like, hey, did you know we're still on Apple Music, like our high school band? And did you know that like it's on, like our CD, physical, is available on CD Baby? He goes, did it show up?
So that was like something that was initiated a long time ago and never got followed up on?
Well, no, I mean, it's been, that CD came out in 2005, 2006, yeah. 2005, I forget. When did that album come out? We went on tour in 2006 for that CD. So yeah, I mean, so it's been 12 years that CD Baby's just been sitting with that in a shelf. You think? Like they keep that many CDs?
I don't know. Did CD Baby get absorbed by Amazon?
I don't know.
Well, it was interesting. It was a fun little journey through time the other day when I was looking through. Like, I found a bunch of really great old photos of you in your Linkin Park shirt.
Oh, shit. Where did you find this?
So much cargo shorts.
How did you find this? This is creepy. Where did you get that?
Oh, man. The guitar's bigger than you.
Where did you find this shit?
Okay, so when the Venetia Fair broke up, you remember there was that article in that local
publication? Yeah, the local paper. Yeah, somebody I got put into that.
You were in most of the pictures.
Yeah, because they were just, it was like really sad. It was like a chronicle of like, it was like everything they'd ever done, but all we'd ever done was that shitty high school band.
I was amazed. I didn't know these pictures existed either, but it's great. And you wore this Linkin Park shirt a lot.
I think it was just a lot of shows from that thing.
I mean, there are two very different shows here. And one, you're wearing a baseball cap, which is interesting. Mm-hmm.
I was Mike with the hat for high school. That was my thing.
Well, in the other photo where you're wearing the same Linkin Park shirt, you are not wearing a hat.
I had spiked hair, yeah.
Reese.
Exactly what you're talking about. Reese?
Malcolm
in the Middle. Yeah, no, it was a tough time for style and looking good. The emo bangs came in probably like 2 years later.
And look,
Tom DeLonge was my model at every haircut appointment that I ever had.
I can't confirm this.
Swoop my hair.
From the picture that I have, but it looks like you're wearing a puka shell necklace.
I would never wear a puka shell necklace. I would absolutely wear a ghetto chain.
Okay.
That chain followed me for a long time. My mom gave it to me. No, high school, I think that picture you're seeing is from like sophomore year of high school. And so that probably I took it off, right when I started growing emo bangs, I think, cause I realized it wasn't cool to, it was like, you know, what's it called? What's the word? Where you just like, you can't reconcile two like styles at the same time. But like it's that processing that your brain does. I can't remember right now, but yeah, it's I just couldn't process like being like an emo kid. I wasn't even that bad of an emo kid, but I couldn't have emo bangs and a chain on at the same time. It just makes sense. I should have gotten goth. If I had been goth, I could have rocked a chain. That's really that should have been my move instead of Blink-182 Tom DeLonge trying to rip off his look.
Yeah,
I should
have gone full goth here. It's a great look. It's a good look. Oh, man.
I have a whole, I could send you a whole photo library full of Sally Boy pictures.
I'd love that.
No, I'm not going to send you pictures of myself. That's
Mike, if you die, someone needs to have this backed up.
I'll bequeath you my hard drive. It's all yours.
I don't know what to do with it. Okay, I've got all the Sally Boy stuff. This is important to Ben, maybe?
No. If it's important to anybody, it's not important. Anybody you're thinking of, it's not important to.
Okay.
Chuck gave me all of the rest of our Sally Boy stuff, or my high school band. Like, he came to visit New York probably 3 or 4 years ago, and he gave me a cardboard box, and it was filled with it had our first cassette demo. This is like this is like So We Sing, the one you out ordered that I was 17 when I made that record. Mm-hmm. Probably 16 and 17. This cassette was from when
you
we were 13.
12.
Thank you. It's my Italian cheese.
You all look young. You're not the only person in these pictures. You're all very, very young kids.
We were 13 to 14 years old. Here we go. Putting that there. There. I just sent you a picture. That was from a show called Stash Fest. You'll notice if you zoom in that I have a mustache on my face in this picture.
Oh, yes.
Everybody at that show had a mustache on their face. It was called Stash Fest, and we did like the old school flyering for that. We would hand out flyers, or I would say we, but I didn't go to their high school, so it would just be them standing at the exit of school and be like, come to the First Baptist Church for Stash Fest. All right, guys, we're doing our annual Stash Fest. And yeah, it was just that. And to get in, you had to, you know, take a little piece of like sticky felt and glue it to your face and have a mustache on. And everybody, it was like a crowd of people with mustaches. It was like, it was a cool time. And all the teachers thought it was like, they thought it was like marijuana stash. Like that was what we were doing, because they had like Hemp Fest in Boston and everything. And they thought it was like more sinister than it actually was. There's a lot that went on. Man.
This is not the first time you sent me a picture of yourself in a fake mustache.
I hope it's that's unfortunate for me.
You sent me the picture of yourself dressed as Pedro, right? Didn't you have a fake mustache for that?
Yes. Pedro Sanchez, yes. We all did cosplay, Napoleon Dynamite cosplay, to go watch one of the showings when it was still in theaters.
Oh, this is good. Is this you laying on your back?
Yeah, that's me on my back. That's Chuck playing behind. Yeah, I wish everybody could see these.
Oh,
that's,
man. Okay, right, I jumped out that you were wearing jeans, but so is the guy next to you, but his are rolled up to be...
His are rolled up. No, those are definitely Mark Hoppus-style jorts. Not jorts. What do you call those? Shants, I guess? Yeah, shants is the word for those. There's jorts and there's shants. These are shants. Like, just imagine Mark Hoppus circa 2003. That's what he wore. Just jeans that cut off mid-calf. They're like loose caprice.
Mike, at this time in your life, you were in a rock band. And at the same point in my life, I was learning how to play trombone.
That's cool. Yeah. You're cool. You're a cool dude. Mm. I was playing trumpet. That was my first instrument.
I learned what Green Day was this year.
This, like 2019 this year?
No, 2003.
Okay, I need to clarify what this year, your pronoun choice there, or your demonstrative pronoun.
I'm sorry, I'm living in these photos that you're sending me. They're fascinating.
Yeah, no, they're great. It's good.
Well, there's a set list in this one.
Yeah, you'll have to look at that one. Zoom in on that. Man, good times. That was a basement. I got kicked in the head at that show.
You're on the ground.
The end of it, at some point... Another iteration of that band played called 16 East. Have you found that yet in the internet?
No.
Yeah, 16 East is good. That was when like we started listening to At the Drive-In, and so when I was at college, they made 16 East, and they played that show, and they asked me, I think I sang or something or played bass in one of the songs, and at some point, just all my clothes came off, and I was just playing in my boxers. It was very Blink-182.
Oh boy, is the 16 East spelled out or?
16 number and then dash east, I think, is the thing.
Oh, no, you didn't.
What?
You did a number dash word.
I wasn't in this band. This was not my band. The joke is that Sam from Phoenicia Fair was in this band only because I was at college. Also because I think it was their senior project. I think that was the thing with Phoenicia Fair too, is that they said, like, they teased Sam. They're like, Sam, you're only in this band because Mike is at college.
Oh, this is referenced in the same article. I'm saying this now. Okay. Yeah. Bottom of the Blood Well and 16 East.
Bottom of the Blood Well was something else entirely, dude. That was... Oh, man. I mean, I guess not entirely, because that was this band. It was just the same band, but just all switched instruments, and they all wore leather pants and makeup. Pleather, I guess, to be fair. I can send you some Bottom of the Blood Well pics.
After seeing a glam death metal group, Ben Santoro was inspired to fashion a joke band in the same style. He began to sing and realized that he had some ability. Okay, so this is like the origins of Ben as a lead vocalist, but he made a joke band where everybody was dressing the same, but that's like very much a thing now. Like that's what makes a lot of bands popular.
That was like very ahead of its time, because like we had like what was the bands then were like Hollywood Undead, I think, was like the dress up band. Like Vampires Everywhere wasn't a thing yet. And I don't know.
Blackfield Brides wasn't around yet.
Right. Like, so they were like doing the parody metal stuff way before anybody else was. I mean, I guess Spinal Tap is probably the exception to that, but would be the real metal parody stuff.
But this is such a wholesome article.
The article about like their past. I think it was sweet because
I'm
it was like their
this
final
because
show.
It's so good. Like they go through the entire history of the band. It explains how you and Ben were friends from karate school.
That's weird to me that they included that stuff. Like there's no reason the reporter should have included that. Like I'm sending you pictures from Bottom of the Bloodwell right now. Oh man. These are great.
Oh, that's fishnets.
Yeah, I mean these are all members of Venetia Fair.
Yeah. It makes
sense.
The
last one's the best.
Oh God.
Yeah, so all these pictures that I'm sending you are pictures of people that ended up in Venetia Fair and, you know, went on to have careers as touring musicians, but this is them in high school, you know, like
That's fun, they
gave us like 30-minute sets of just this and it was so good. Like the songs, have you ever heard you didn't hear any of the Bottom of the Bloodwell stuff?
No, I can't it's not
there
linked here and
two. I can't say the name. I can't say the name of some of the songs. It's just so bad. Like it's not like racist or anything like that, or like, you know, horribly offensive. It's just like gross, like names that like I just don't want to say.
Sure.
But like they were about tying his shoes. Like they'd have a gross title, but he just wrote an entire song about tying his shoes. It was just like
that's also very wholesome.
It was very good. The chorus was, "I need some help tying both my shoes, tying both my shoes."
The only reference on the internet for D is for Apple, Sprained Personalities record, is this article.
That's insane. Does it talk about, please tell me that article talks about, what's it called? Bottom of the Bloodwell, and then what was the grind band? Ben and one of the guys from 16 East and Bottom of the Bloodwell made a grindcore band. What was they called? What were they called? I have to open iTunes to pull up the track.
I don't see that listed.
The song
here
was called Punched in the Dick, is the name of their song. Bloodstool was the name of it. Punched in the Dick was the name of the song. The album that they were going to make was called How Many Ways Do You Want to Die? And it just starts with a Fight Club quote, as all great song grind songs go. And it goes like, and then it breaks into blast beats and Ben screaming and direct input guitars through like an amp sim and garage band. It's so good. I should send you this stuff.
Oh yeah, I want to hear all of it. It's, you've been trickling things to me over the years, and it's been interesting to listen to. Like, I don't think I actually. Oh yeah, I guess I do have a lot of the Sprained Personality stuff, but it's mixed. Like, I'm missing a bunch of tracks, and it's kind of hard to determine why.
That is weird.
Like, I have tracks 2, 3, 4, and 9, as well as a couple random ones from Sally Boy. And then Sprained Personality, I'm missing tracks 1, 3, 4, 5, and then the last, basically the last half of the record.
I don't know why that would be.
I don't know. Listen to this stuff though. Like there are some really great gems in here.
No, don't listen to it. It's bad. It's like, it's not good. Every once in a while it'll come on my shuffle and like, cause I haven't unchecked it or something and it's just bad.
How upset would you be if right here over this part where I'm talking, I cut in a little bit from Enrique? I can be your hero, baby. I can kiss away the pain. I can stand by you forever. You can take my breath away. It's
more embarrassing that we called it Enrique.
I know.
Jake's referencing a cover of Enrique Iglesias' song Hero that we just called Enrique for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's Enrique Iglesias, but can I tell you a story about that song? When you're a band starting out, you really don't understand like the idea that pay to play is bad, but essentially we signed on to a big show at the Worcester Palladium that's called like Worcester. Worcester Palladium was like a big, like, music hall, essentially, like a mid-sized music hall. And every once in a while, like, this one company would rent it out and make a bunch of local bands, like 50 local bands, sell 20 tickets each, and they would show up and just do it. Basically, it was a pay-to-play, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And, like, you had to sell a certain amount of tickets, and you were allowed to play. And, like, 50 bands on this thing. And we played Enrique. We played that song, and then... somebody, like, we're hanging out outside the venue after the show, and somebody comes up to me and is just like, somebody just covered Enrique also. Like, I was, what the fuck? It's like two bands at this show covered Enrique Iglesias. And like, that was when we realized, like, okay, this has to stop. We have to not do this anymore.
Wait, so you started college and when?
I started college in 2005.
Jesus Christ.
I feel like anybody who listens to this podcast is going to have every security question for any account I've ever made in my entire life.